Well, anyway, so some of you were asking if we were going to make the slide decks available of this session and the sessions for the rest of the day. Yes, they're available there in that blog, which is my blog. So you guys can go there and download the package with all the slide decks. And we also have the Expression Blend and Windows Phone project that Jared will build at the end of the day. You can download all the assets there. I'm going to show that link later again. So, in summary, one of the things that... So we're coming back from a break. So, summary, we were taking a look at the Metro design language and getting much deeper into the different aspects of the language so that we can then learn how to use these building blocks to design Windows Phone apps. We talked about motion, typography. Let's now talk about iconography. So these are some of the traditional Metro-looking icons that we use in Windows Phone. They follow some of the same principles of the icons in the international typographic style that I described earlier in the session. Minimalistic, they communicate only what's needed. Notice, for example, the star icon right there, add to favorites. The star, we could have made it yellow and it could have been glowing and have sparkles coming out of it. But instead, we decided to do something minimalistic and just communicating what's needed to illustrate the point in that particular case. Here are a few more examples of icons in Windows Phone, the Windows Phone design style. And these icons, there are actually 40 of them, they come with the Windows Phone SDK. They're included there that you guys can use. You can also create your own. And if you actually have time today, we might even show you how to you can design your own icons. Let's talk now about themes and personalization. So in Windows Phone, users can choose an accent color. This is something that they can choose out of the box, and they can choose an accent color that they feel identify with, that they feel, you know, kind of talks to them in a good way on that particular day. I, for example, I do change my accent color every 2 or 3 days. I don't know, depending on how I feel or where I am, I kind of want to have a different accent color. So accent colors is something that can eventually influence some of your design decisions, because you can decide to incorporate the accent color from the user into your application in different ways. There is a second aspect of personalization and theme from the user that you have to consider when designing apps, and that is the background color. So we have a dark background color, which is black, and it looks a little bit like that, or a light theme color, which looks a little bit like that. Now, the reason why this background color is important is because if you, at some point, design your application using perhaps some typography or white text, if the user selects this theme, then your text will not be viewable or readable. So in many cases, you want to design your app in a way that it reacts smartly depending on what the user has chosen. Now, talking again about accent colors. Accent colors can be used in different ways in your application. You can decide whether you want to use it, or if you can also decide if you do not want to use it. If you want to use it, you can utilize the accent color to emphasize function. We use accent color in our email application, for instance, to communicate the concept that an email has not been read. When an email has been read, the title of the email will change to a lighter gray. So that was the way that we are using the accent color in that particular application. Now, a lot of people ask us all the time, do I have to integrate the accent color to my application? You see, must do it? And the answer is no. In many cases, the branding for your application or your client will be strong enough that you might not want or need to integrate the accent color of the user. It will depend on your application. Let's talk about images and photos. So we've been talking a lot about typography and how typography is important in Metro, in the Metro design language. But images and photos are just as important. And here we can see how we're using some of the images. Notice here these infographics. Infographics hang out really well with Metro. When you use infographics, notice we don't really use borders or drop shadows or anything like that. We like infographics to feel like they are floating on top of the background, in this case, this panorama control. Again, this use of images, super clean, no borders or drop shadows or anything like that. Notice also the background that we're using here in this panorama control. A lot of people think that we have to have full-size background images in panorama controls, but not all the time. You can also play, you know, more gracefully with something more like a footer for a panorama that only goes on the bottom of this particular control. We'll talk much more about panorama in a moment. Notice also here, very clean use of photography. Here's another design idea that I can give to you, especially developers. This application, which is the application we will talk about later in the session, when we go to the design session, the brand for this application says that we will be using green, white, and black color, right? Now, when the designer licensed this photo, perhaps from a web service like iStockphoto.com or Getty Images or something like that, when this photo was licensed, most possibly, I can assure you, the sky in this image was blue, right? Now, again, our natural tendency would be to just use the photo as it was provided to us, right, with blue sky. But our branding says white is the background color for our application. So the designer did what he had to do, which is remove the blue color in the sky and, of course, made the image in sync or look and feel in sync with the rest of the application. So developers, feel free to tweak images and tweak photos so that they follow your branding and the overall look and feel of your application. In this particular case, we took out the blue color of the sky, but that makes everything unified. That's a very simple design concept there. Here we have more use of images. And actually, there's a little one here that I want to show you. You guys see this little infographic up here? It's a little kind of top view, like a 3D infographic view of the golf course. Notice one thing here. Some people have asked me before, why are we not framing this image in a square or a rectangle? How come this one is floating just there? And one of the things that I've noticed is that infographics, again, I would call this really an infographic because it's an abstraction of the golf course. It's not a photo or anything like that. It's an abstraction of the golf course. Infographics do really well in Metro when they are cut out and they are left like this, kind of floating on top of the background. And there's another example here, for instance, in the avatar, yeah, you know, in the Xbox application. An avatar, if you think about it, an avatar is an infographic of ourselves, right? It's an abstraction of ourselves. It's an infographic. And so it looks really well when the infographics float on top of the background with no framing. Again, there's no rectangle or square right here. It's just a nice infographic. In this case, happens to be an avatar floating there. There is a little bit of shadow going on down here. And again, even though Metro is not 3D, we do like to play with foreground and background layers. And that adds depth to Metro. Notice also how this arm, the arm from the avatar, is actually extending and kind of breaking the grid a little bit, even overlapping with these elements over here. This is a kind of a way that designers and developers, you guys can break the grid a little bit, kind of in a gracious way, right? They're still structuring the page and in the composition, but some of these elements allow you to give more movement and dynamism to your composition. Here's another example of use of images and photos in Windows Phone. Notice that here the background of the panorama is a full screen photo. One thing to consider if you decide to use something like this is that you will have user interface elements floating on top of this background image. And so you might want to, you know, be careful so that these objects and these words are readable. You can do that by doing a couple different things. You can decide to curate and choose specifically the images that will be displayed back here. Or you could also add a semi-transparent layer on top of this image. Could be white, could be black. It is recommended that that layer is not a gradient, but that it's flat, single color, just semi-transparent. Let's talk about touch and gestures and touch targets. These are the conventional gestures that we use in Metro. As we mentioned before, Metro is not only the way things look, but also the way people interact with these different things. So the tap gesture is used usually to expand or to select or to open an element. It's a very simple gesture that we all use to select elements. Double tap basically helps you navigate back and forth between different zoom levels or context levels within the same application or particular element. Panning, again. Oh, question back there? Yes. It's when you release, right? Yeah. By default.
But you can, I think it's, there's a property on it, I think it's called like button something method, and you can set it to be on press, on release, on different kinds of
methods. Could everyone hear that? Yeah. Thank you, Jared. Oh, so the answer was by default it's when you release, but Jared tells us that you can override that behavior in case you wanted something to be on touch as well. So panning, again, panning, very simple. Basically, it anchors the content on the screen to your finger, and the content will follow your finger. It's something that you would use, of course, for things like a panorama control and any other, you know, map or something like that. We have flick. Flick is kind of similar to panning, but flick is more like you're throwing things. Helps the user reposition elements on the screen. It's also the type of gesture that you would use in a list box. If you're searching for an element, you won't pan the list box. You will be more like flicking to search for an element. Touch and hold is a very particular gesture, also Windows Phone. Touch and hold is basically like a right click in the desktop world, right? You tap and hold, and in Windows Phone, that will usually, almost always, show or display a context menu. And we rely on context menus a lot for different elements. That helps us clean up the UI and put some contextual actions on a particular object only when they are needed. Then in terms of multi-touch gestures, we have a pinch and stretch. Again, super common. We've all used that in zooming in and zooming out images or maps. And then we have this concept of 4 points. So the Windows Phone operating system actually supports up to 10 touch points, but most hardware around the world supports only 4. So we call it 4 touch points. And this is where you guys can bring in your own gestures and design, you know, your own particular gestures that you would like to do. For example, if you wanted to have something like a knob that turns, and for some reason you want to make it feel more like you are rotating something with 4 fingers, that's the way you would do it. Of course, when you start getting into creating own gestures, you have to do more research and testing to make sure that you're not having people do, you know, something kind of like this, you know, where sometimes it's hard. And we've had some Kinect sessions in other events where we kind of show people how to design air gestures. So with fingers, it might even be harder, right? So you just want to make sure you're testing some of that. Target size guidelines. This is an important topic as well. So this is the recommended minimum touch target in Windows Phone for elements, 9 millimeters, which equals roughly to 9 pixels, because of course there are screens of different sizes. But I'll also give you kind of the pixel size just as a quick reference. So this is the recommended minimum touch target. Now the actual minimum touch target is 7 pixels. So based on user testing, the team realized that going from 7 to 9 pixel in touch target for elements in the user interface, the success ratio from users substantially increased. So 7, 9 pixels and beyond, of course, it makes it much easier for users to successfully tap an element. Now, 5 pixels or 4.5 millimeters is the minimum visual size for a touchable item. This is the recommended minimum visual size for a touchable item. What does this mean? This means that you could have a very small, tiny little element of 5 pixels, but you still want to make the touchable area of that element at least 9 pixels so that we can respect that first recommendation. So you will extend the touch area. Now, the concept of touch area is so important in a small screen for any device, but of course in Windows Phone it's so important that the design studio actually came up with this concept of green lines. Are you familiar with red lines? Have you guys heard of red lines, the concept of red lines, designers, developers? Not many. So red lines, I'll start describing red lines first. Red lines are basically like the blueprints. Think of the blueprints of a house or a building, right, from architects. These blueprints describe the design of the building. They provide the dimensions, the gaps, the distances, and other specifications. They know, they tell you exactly where a column will be located, or where the door will be located, or how wide will be the door or the wall, right? So in user interface design, the concept of red lines is what designers use to communicate exactly the same concept, to leave zero ambiguity on where a button should be located. So if a button needs to be located at 30 pixels to the left and 30 pixels from the top, that is specified in a red line, so that when the developer takes the design and makes the implementation, the button is placed precisely at those 30, 30 coordinate. Those are red lines. Now, green lines is something that the design studio came up with because touch areas are such a critical part of designing the experience in Windows Phone that they needed to communicate these touchable areas as well, so that engineering could successfully implement that as well as design integration. We should probably talk more about how the studio is organized, maybe in the next session. So one of the things you want to be careful with when it comes to touch areas or green lines, which help you describe touch areas, is you want to avoid these type of scenarios where touch areas overlap, because that will cause a conflict for the user, of course. It's better to have them to avoid overlapping, and even better to have some buffer in between touchable items. Here are some actual green lines from Windows Phone. This is the call, the phone call UI. You can see how the end call button touch area is actually considerably much larger than the button itself. It has 24 pixels to the top, 24 pixels to the bottom, 12 to the right, 12 to the left. So touch areas don't mean that they have to be the same size all object. It just means that you have to have them. And same thing for all these other buttons. Here's another example, right? If the button that we've seen in Windows Phone in the start screen, the little arrow, right? If we really wanted to make it more touchable, the designers could have said, well, let's just make it bigger, right? But that might start not looking so nice. So, you know, the button stays small, but notice the touchable area of this button is actually much larger than that. So again, touchable areas is an important area to consider for you guys as designers, as developers, when designing a phone application. This is an interesting table, and again, these materials are available for you to download and explore in more detail, but This is a perceived performance or perceived performance recommendations that we're giving you to help or to help you with your users, you know, have your users perceive that your application is running or performing faster. For instance, we go from recommendations like instantaneous response. So if the user should be expecting instantaneous response on a user interface element, we recommend you guys use the tilt animation. And someone was talking to Jared, I believe, or Jared, you were tilt animation during the break. The tilt animation will help you communicate that. We'll take a look at that type of animation later. And you can see in this table, you know, we go, okay, if you want to, for example, show a very short wait, you would display a loader type of animation that shows that type of concept, etc., etc. I'm going to skip this and just go to controls. So, okay, panorama and pivot. I quickly described and mentioned the word panorama and pivot, but we haven't really talked about them. Let's start talking about panorama. Let me jump directly into panorama. And so panorama and pivot are probably, they're two of the foundational kind of structural controls that help you design Windows Phone applications. They're kind of those big controls that will then host other controls inside of them, like images or buttons or any other thing. Now, panoramas like this one, we've seen panoramas before today in the session today, earlier in the session, but let me give you a few aspects of what a panorama is. First of all, the way for you to think of a panorama, think of it as a magazine cover, right? Think of it as a magazine cover. A magazine cover will expose only the most important and interesting aspects of the content of the magazine. In the case of a panorama for a Windows Phone application, it's the same thing. A panorama will usually expose only those particular pieces of information or content or images or music or any other thing that you might be doing that are most important in your application. It is not meant to be a control that exposes all the information. It is not meant to be a control that exposes a list of 100 different items. Instead, it's more, again, like this magazine cover. For designers, designing a panorama is actually a fun design exercise because you do not have to think in terms of screens. It's not like screen 1, screen 2, screen 3, screen 4. Instead, as a designer, you think of the whole spread, end to end, and then you make that happen and you make that work within Windows Phone. Now, we do have the concept of panels, but that's mostly just to give structure to the panorama. But the way that you design a panorama as a designer, a developer, again, is thinking of the whole spread as a whole. Usually the first panel that welcomes you in a panorama is a menu. It's a navigation menu that will help the user go to different sections of your application. That's usually the case. Notice also this other concept here. This is something we call content picking. This content picking concept, basically it means that we're showing a little bit of the content that comes next in the panorama. And this takes us back to that concept of selling continuity or the feeling of continuity to the user that we've been talking a lot about in the sessions today. This helps the user understand that there's more around here to explore. I've seen different applications where there is nothing being shown here. And so the user, it might not be very clear to the user that they can actually pan and discover more areas or more information to the right or to the left. Another interesting concept here is that if you notice these six panels in this featured section, all these six panels will not fit in at the same time in this screen. This is wider than this. And in a panorama, again, that's just fine. In a panorama, again, you want to think of the whole spread, and you will be able to pan throughout these different stages. We can see that more clearly here, for instance. This is another panorama. Usually welcomes you with a menu. Content picking here. All these different elements, 1, 2, and then this long one, all these elements, even though they are part of the same cluster of elements, they will not fit in here at the same time. In a panorama, that's just fine. What's going to happen is some of these elements will be displayed, these ones will cut off, and then the next ones will be available to the right. Here's another example, same thing here. Notice how also the layouts for the panels in the panorama, they are very different. There are just a lot of possibilities. I actually have a file here that I'm working on right now. I can share with you kind of some of the work that I'm doing. We'll eventually share this with you as well. Let me see if it opens quickly. Oh, yeah. So here, for instance, we have what I'm putting together here are more templates for panoramas. But here you can see how there's basically in a panorama you can design any layout that you want. I'm relying on the design grid. Oh, question there? Yes. It will snap. The question is, every time that you pan in a panorama, I'm assuming, right? Yeah. Will it just pan kind of indefinitely? It will snap. Now, if you pan longer, then you can quickly jump into other panels, but it will tend to snap. And Jared, you can control how and when it snaps, right? I believe.
How and when it snaps. However, it normally snaps to the default left-hand side of every one of these, unless you have a double wide, which is like featured. In that case, it will snap to both the right and the left-hand side.
Got it. Oh, so here and then here. Mm-hmm. Nope. Like one we could build here?
Yeah.
No. Maybe in the emulator, you could show it. Yeah. So, but again, going back to the panorama, when it comes to layouts, you know, here are just a few. Like these are six of them. This is like one big featured item. This is a gallery, which is actually very similar to the one that Facebook uses. So when it comes to panoramas, you guys can, you know, go crazy and create any layout that you think will satisfy your particular needs. And again, the only trick here is to follow the grid. I have some of the grids here. And so here, for instance, let me zoom in here. You will notice how these different elements are matching the grid in different ways. But coming back here, again, panorama, think of it as the whole spread, as a magazine cover. Here are a couple more examples from Food Assistant. Again, a menu that welcomes the user. In this case, notice the background of the panorama is this image, which was probably pre-edited in Photoshop, maybe lightened up or something like that. However, if your background will be dynamic, maybe the background will be changing depending on the featured item of the day or something like that, then a way in which you could do something like this would be by having something like a rectangle on top of this element with semi-transparent white or black or other colors. Again, notice that the type of layouts that we're using here, different typography. We're just leveraging the grid. Facebook, again, Facebook welcomes users also with a menu. Completely different layout compared to other applications. This kind of a fun way to lay out some of the latest and featured photos in your wall. Notice one interesting aspect here in Facebook. They decided to add a little icon next to the menu options, which in general we don't see a lot in panoramas. But again, this really will depend on your branding. For Facebook, for example, Facebook recognizes that a lot of users learned how to use Facebook and learned to love Facebook through the website, right? Through the web version of Facebook. And so they felt like adding these icons would help users identify the key regions and functions of Facebook in the phone application as well. Here's another panorama control. We've seen this one before. Now, notice how, again, here the background in the panorama is just this kind of very simple footer on the background. And by now, we've seen four different ways in which we can use backgrounds in panoramas. This is kind of a very simple footer in a panorama. Facebook doesn't even have a background, so you don't always have to have backgrounds in panoramas. This is kind of a blurred out or lightened up background. And here's a full-size background in a panorama. So here are four different ways in which you can use photos in panoramas. You don't necessarily have to go full screen all the time. Let's talk now about the
Arturo.
One
thing to note, by default, the control panorama, the background image on it. So that guy image looks like he's a separate layer from the default background image. Did you note that the the background image actually scrolls slower than the front ground, the foreground, sorry. So if you scroll through this, that text will slowly, or the text in foreground will scroll more rapidly than the grass in the background.
It's what we call the parallax effect, I believe,
yes.
Right?
Yes, to add it, give the screen some dimension.
Yeah, and a little bit more sense of depth. That's actually a very interesting concept as well that I guess just continues to sell this concept of depth. We'll probably see that in the app once we build it from scratch. So talking more about the app bar, let's start talking more now about controls. App bar, we described it initially. App bar is this bar at the bottom of the screen. Think of it as your main menu. As we said before, it's usually mostly to expose functions versus navigation, even though we have identified that there's navigation and that tends to leave here in the application menu. When users tap the ellipses, these ellipses here in the app bar will raise and will display some application menu options. The application bar uses a very specific type of buttons called icon buttons that use these little icon styles here. And as of the Mango release, we now also have a mini app bar or a mini application bar, which is smaller. It does not expose icon buttons, but it still has the menu options. This is a great way for you guys to get more real estate and more pixels for your application when you feel like you need them. Let's quickly talk or go through some of the user interface controls. Button, of course, we have a button. It's a very simple, perhaps one of the most primitive controls. It's a push button. But we have other types of buttons. We have a toggle button. A toggle button will, of course, toggle between true or false. It will usually be used to help you, define settings. It's basically acts as a switch. We also have icon buttons, the ones I was describing as part of the app bar. Dialog buttons are basically push buttons that usually live within a dialog box that is asking for user's input, and command buttons, which can actually host a description along with the label of the button itself. Now, checkbox and radio buttons, there's not a lot to talk about them. They just work as you would expect, right? They're just radio buttons and checkboxes. Now, slider is kind of interesting. You can turn the thumb of a slider on or off, depending on your preference. We also have tick marks for the sliders. I don't know if you guys can see them. They're very tiny. You can turn those on or off or define the separation for them. Again, the slider, it's very minimalistic, very simple looking. Just communicating what's needed. Progress bar, another interesting control that's very much needed in mobile applications for obvious reasons. We want to let people know how much time approximately is left in a particular process, or simply tell them that they need to wait a little bit for something to finalize. We have two different types of progress bars in general. We have this full bar progress bar, and this is a bar that you will want to use when you're going from in a process, when you're trying to illustrate or communicate a process that's going from 0% to 100%. These other progress bar, these floating dots, these animated dots, this is mostly for communicating a waiting scenario. So in that case, you don't have a 0 to 100%, hopefully the task will eventually be finalized, but it's more to let the user know that they should wait until the current task is completed. There's also this loading weight cursor that you can use to illustrate that the whole screen is still loading. This is very common in Windows Phone. Now, the list box control. A list box control can be as simple as a list of elements like this, but it's actually very flexible. You can literally do anything. If you have a previous experience with Silverlight, you will know this is just a list box control like the one we knew in Silverlight. Super flexible. You can customize it depending on your needs. That's a control you could eventually use to create something like a grid like this or any other type of grid. You could add buttons or other icons inside of each list box item, etc., etc. It's super flexible. Talking about text and keyboard and keywords, we have four different types of text controls. We have text block, which is basically a fixed, non-editable text element, great for labels or any other thing that's not really editable. Text box, which is editable. Every time that the user taps in a text box, the keyword will be displayed. A password box, of course, it masks the characters. And a rich text box, I don't have an example of a rich text box here. It's new in Mango, and it allows you to host text of different sizes, different colors, different weights within the same box. In terms of keywords, keywords by itself is a whole area of exploration. We have different keywords for different languages, but some key concepts to mention here is we have a default keyword, of course. We have a candidate window for the keyboard, which is this one over here. And you as a developer or as a designer, you can choose to turn this on or off depending on your on the particular experience that you want to give to the users. The candidate window will basically be displaying words that we think will match or are matching what the user is trying to type, and basically accelerating or helping the user get to typing much faster. There's also an auto-suggest window like this one, which is great for completing phrases or for things like search mechanisms, etc., etc. Again, things that you guys can decide to use depending on the experience you want to communicate. The browser control is basically just a rendering surface. It doesn't have any buttons or controls. You can have your own address bar or other things if you want. You can implement them on top of the control, but it's basically just a way for you to kind of integrate web content into your application. Into your application, make it kind of feel like it's part of the application itself. Maps. This is another very useful control for you guys. It comes out of the box. This is the typical use of maps in an application. You would have a list of different results or locations. You can select one. Then you would look at the details of a particular element or a particular item. This is a way that we usually use to showcase maps. In this case, I would just try to fill up this little gap. I would not have this gap empty here. I would probably just push the map to go all the way to the left. But it starts giving the user some information about the location. If the user taps this preview of the map, then they can be taken to the full map experience. Video and audio. If you're familiar, again, with Silverlight, the control is called Media Element. It's what allows you to host video or audio in your application. Now, here, one heads up is that we do not provide an out-of-the-box video player for you guys to use, but you guys are free to create your video player or audio player depending on your needs. Here are a few examples. They are all very similar. This one, for example, has a thumb in the slider. This one here, it doesn't. This one actually, it exposes a little icon that allows the video to feel the screen or not. Like, you might have a 4x3 video or a 16x9 video. You might want to fill the screen or not.
Yeah, although we have the media element and you can write your own controls for it, And we don't have sort of this skin at the bottom. This is the default skin that's on the media player on the first party experience. We do, however, provide the play pause button icons forward and back and the progress bar. So it's kind of interesting. We provide all the pieces for this, but not all
in one. We provide the pieces, but not in the actual player. A question there. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you absolutely, with the media element, you have as much control as you want. Like, you can literally call the name of the media element .pause.play in the code and control volume, all kinds of different things. However, this little skinned piece that pops up over the media element, that in itself just doesn't come out of the box, I guess.
Can we lower the volume? Can we control the Soon volume level from our application?
By default, whenever your media plays in your application, Soon or whatever else will tune out, will fade out completely to zero, and then we'll come back in when the media stops playing. It tunes out all the way to zero. So if you have some sort of audio kick in, some chime, some music, it'll just completely die out, and then it'll come back.
So, as Jared was pointing out, that's probably why all the icons on all these three different skins or three different video players is the only thing that's the same. Everything does change. Now, talking more about video and audio, and this starts taking us to this concept of creating a one single experience for Windows Phone. Even though we are all creating different apps, we want to make it feel like a unified experience. And this is an example of some of the things that we're doing in the team to help you extend your application beyond your application. We have the music and videos hub in Windows Phone. And if you're creating a music, video, podcast related type of application, you can actually hook up to this hub, to the music and videos hub, and expose your application in that hub. And this is just one example of how we help, like I was saying, take your application outside of your application and be reachable by other means. So in this particular case, the user would go to the music and videos hub that exposes different options. It has one section called apps, and here under apps, you can actually see how some apps have hooked up to the music and videos hub, like Fandango, which is a movies application, so this would be movie trailers, Radio Playlists, which is a third-party developer, it's basically just radio, online radio, even YouTube hooks up to this, and you can leverage even things like history, so if you or the user plays a podcast or watches a video through your application, that particular piece of content will be displayed here in history, it can be registered there. So the user, next time they go to Music and Video Hub, they think of music and video. They go to their Music and Video Hub, that's a centralized hub in Windows Phone, and they might end up launching your application because of a piece of content. So we're trying to do a lot of those types of things to make your application go beyond your application. And we have many more of those that I'll show you in a moment. Notifications, another interesting control that allows your application to go beyond your application. We have three different types of notifications, Toast, Tile, and Raw. Toast is this one that we have on the screen. It's this bar that shows up on the top. It will always be using the accent color that the user chose. This little icon that we see here is customizable. You can pick your own. We strongly recommend you make this little icon something that identifies your application, because that will help the user know where this notification is coming from. This text, of course, can be customized by you. If the Toast notification is ignored, then it will eventually slide out. The user could also do a swipe to the right, and it will dismiss it. But if the user taps the notification, then the user will be taken into that particular application. Now, the tile notification is something I will show you in a moment, and the run notification are basically just notifications that occur within the application itself. So let's start talking. We started talking about this concept of one experience more and more, little by little, right? So now it's time to get much deeper into it. And again, just emphasize that when it comes to thinking about Windows Phone applications, it's not only thinking about the user interface and how it looks, but also how your branding, how your application becomes a part of Windows Phone through different mechanisms like tiles and your splash screen and connecting to the music and video hub. And when it comes to tiles, by the way, the use of live tiles, which I'll show you in a moment, and even up to the way that your application will be showcased in the marketplace or windowsphone.com, it also talks about how your application will integrate with hardware, all the different hardware buttons, accelerometer and gyroscope, and all these other things that we can leverage to create an experience. Let's talk about tiles. We talked about tiles notifications, and I've been mentioning tiles many times. So in Windows Phone, the icons that the user taps to launch an application are not just icons. They are something we call tiles. And hopefully they will be live tiles. So tiles can be static, like just a flat tile, or they could be live tiles. And we strongly recommend you guys make your tiles live. What does it mean? When a tile is live, it will be communicating information and providing data to the users even before the application has been launched. So you can see that in the out-of-the-box experience for Windows Phone, right? We have the tiles for phone, for text messages, for email. And these will, from the very beginning, the tile will tell you with a number, like how many text messages are waiting for you or something like that. Xbox Live does the same thing, perhaps how many new friend requests have you received. And as we will see a little later with Jared, you can use that for other things. If you had a weather application, the weather application could immediately start displaying an icon that shows the weather and the temperature for that particular day. If you're taking a flight, perhaps the live tile for the application, for the airline application, could be displaying your flight number and the time at which you are departing. So tiles are kind of like mini apps in a way that start providing information to the user before the user even launches your application. And we actually care a lot about tiles, and so the team came up with a lot of interesting ways to create really, to come up with creative use of tiles. There is this concept of alpha composite in tiles. And what this means is that in Windows Phone, you can use a PNG image as your tile. And a PNG image, as we know, is a 32-bit pixel, a 32-bit image, which basically has four color channels, three RGB plus an alpha channel, which basically is transparency. And so if you go to Photoshop or Illustrator, any design tool, in this case, we design this particular tile, and we left the glass empty, right? When we put that tile in here, then what's going to happen is that the accent color that the user selected will be visible throughout this tile. So this is a really cool way to still have your own branding, but allow the user accent color to personalize their phone. Here's another example of how the designer took this even further. So here's the same icon, and here you can see some more of these notifications in tiles, right? So here we're suggesting what's the happy hour on Tuesday. Here's the drink of the day called the Grape Houdini, and here you can see how this martini glass, right? In Photoshop, as we know, if we have a grayscale image, you can remove the white or the black in proportionally and make that semi-transparent, and so the designer did that here, and the accent color of the user is showing up through that PNG image because of that particular effect. So again, there's a lot of things you can do with tiles to continue to have your own branding, but still allow the user personalized theme to show up. Here's another example where we're showing, you know, that this particular tile this particular user has 16 points, perhaps has been visiting different bars or restaurants. And this starts taking us to this concept of one experience that we've been talking a lot about. And one of the things we're doing a lot in Microsoft these days, not only in Windows Phone, but in Windows and Xbox, is we're encouraging ourselves, and we want to encourage you guys as well, to think beyond the applications and to think more in terms of experiences, end-to-end experiences. So the way we're seeing applications in Windows Phone is not as entities on their own. We don't see applications as isolated entities of their own, but rather as interconnected things that can provide a unified experience. So for instance, here we have, you know, a music application from a third-party developer, which can integrate with the audio player and the music and video hub. And on this side, we have the same thing. We have other applications that know that we have a contacts list, like, and then we have a service like Facebook, and we have pictures, and all this thing talks about an integrated experience in phone. We're doing the same thing with some of our other platforms. So again, instead of thinking of isolated applications, we're trying to think of end-to-end experiences that react to different screen resolutions and screen sizes. So instead of thinking, for example, I'll give you an example. Instead of thinking of an application for sailing, let's think of the sailing experience. And so here we have a little bit of a Windows Phone application for sailing. And this application is exposing different content. It's exposing weather conditions, recommended routes, which means, you know, GPS, maps, destinations. Destinations could be coming from a popular sailing magazine, from a web service or something like that, and alerts, right? And the alerts could be coming from the national alert system. Now, all this information lives up in the cloud. So it's up to us as designers and developers to think in terms of experiences, to see and to define how we can tailor this information so that it fits nicely into the different screens. But the only way to do that is by thinking in an end-to-end experience instead of just as an isolated Windows Phone application. We think of the end-to-end experience instead. Another example is the running experience. So instead of thinking of creating an application for running, let's think of the running experience. Here's an example, the Nike Plus app. It exposes different workouts that I'm currently interested in doing. Routes, like maps, GPS information again. My list of buddies or friends, it's just a contacts list. And the different challenges that people are inviting me to participate. Now, this is what we can start doing. Yes? I'm sure. Oh, no problem. Some cars there. Okay. So talking about this concept of applications sharing data and thinking in terms of experiences. When we think in terms of experiences, we can more precisely provide users with more meaningful data that's more relevant and more personal. Let me give you an example. In this running experience that we were describing, right? Here, we have two different applications. In this application, we know that the weather in Las Vegas is 75 degrees. And in our contacts list, we know that our friend Anne is our friend because she's in our contacts list. So in a tile, for example, in Windows Phone, we could understand by communicating these apps through the cloud that, you know, our friend Anne is currently living in a city with a really nice weather that particular day, 75 degrees. We're merging information from two different apps. Now here's another one. We have a friend named Anne, and we know she's planning to run that day. And so we can come up with, you know, the understanding that Anne is planning to run, and we can notify the user of something like that. But if we take these to the next level, we can say, okay, so it's 75 degrees in Las Vegas, so great weather. we have a friend named Anne, and she's planning to run. So what can we suggest? What could the title of these our application suggest? Well, let's challenge Anne for a run. All these different information that comes from all these different sources, by understanding it as a unified experience, can give us more meaningful information that we can use. And here's another third example, which is the phone experience. And Bill Buxton, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Bill Buxton. He's one of the senior design researchers in Microsoft. And he explains the phone experience in with the following scenario. And he was asking some of us in a meeting a few months ago about rethinking what is the phone experience of today. What do we call a phone? Because this is what we call a phone today, right? But he was questioning, is that really the phone? And the way he describes the phone today is that we're walking on the street with this thing, we're talking, we're having a phone call, we get into our car, we plug our phone to our car, maybe our car has something like Microsoft Sync or something like that. And so by doing that, the phone functionality gets kind of metaphysically transferred to the car. And so now the car is your phone effectively. The speakers of the car, you can listen to the person you're talking to, you have integrated microphones, etc., etc. You park, you step out of your car, you bring your phone, and bringing the phone from back into this device. You continue walking and making a phone call, you arrive to your computer, to your desktop, you plug your phone, and again, kind of the phone functionality transfers to this other thing, which we usually would call the computer, but now it's our phone. So he asks, what is the phone, right? And by thinking in terms of experiences, instead of isolated applications, we think that you can establish longer-term relations with your customers. And you will be seeing more of that in how Microsoft is creating all these different platforms, including Windows 8 and Windows Phone and Xbox, to empower you guys to create these end-to-end experiences. Now, in fact, I want to show you three videos that cover the last 60 years when it comes to phone. And I want to show you how nations of users have changed so dramatically in this time when it comes to phone. The interesting thing about all of us in this room is that, well, we are part of the tech industry, right? In the tech industry, everything changes really quickly. So by thinking in terms of experiences, we think you're going to be able to create products that will react better to user expectations. So let me play you this kind of an interesting video from 60 years ago that will show you the values and expectations that people had about phones. So let's take a look at this first video. I think this video just speaks by itself. 60 years ago, the expectations about what a phone should be like was totally different from today, right? Back then, it was about explaining to people the basics, like, right? How to use it and how to leverage this technology, etc., etc. So now let's fast forward in time 30 years, right, to the early 80s, 1980s. And let's now take a look at an advertisement from one of the first cell phones. And notice how the values and the expectations of what a phone is have changed or changed so dramatically. So let's take a look at this video. That kid is not who you think he is, I can assure you. But again, it's just amazing how in 30 years expectations and values change, right? Of course, talking to other people was a given. That's what phones were for. But now it was about location. You can talk from anywhere. So people and companies were trying to sell you on that idea of what a phone was. Now, let's fast forward 30 years in time, which is today, which is kind of crazy to think it's already 30 years. And let's take a look again to another like TV ad and another ad of how a company is pitching a phone today and, you know, showing some of the values and expectations that people have about phones in the year 2011-12. Okay, now I can tell the marketing team that I did show you this video. But again, just notice the values and expectations, how much they've changed. Now, we close with the phrase, hundreds of features, right? Because now, of course, we know it's not even about location. Now it's about how much empowerment we're providing to people in a single phone. And so, you know, the way every company, not only Microsoft, but every other company is pitching their own phones is by showing you guys how much empowerment you will have if you use this one. As an interesting, you know, exercise or food for thought, fast forward 30 years in time. I don't have a video for that, but I wonder where we're going to be. It's going to be interesting what's going to be the next thing. But okay, so again, just to summarize this, it's important to think in terms of experiences, because just like the phone changes, every other thing, every other application that you guys think of, whether it's inventory or expense management or restaurants or anything, will continue to change. So it's better to think in terms of experiences than applications. Okay, so we're going to have a lunch. I think I ran past like 5 minutes. So let's go for lunch. And when we come back, we're going to have another session on think and design. And, well, enjoy lunch. We're going to be here if you have any questions or comments. Thank you.